Mix.
Sports Show.
It is the Mixed Pick Sports Show, which you can be part of by emailing us like Marcus did, rad@radradio.com. You can call anytime during the live hour, 888-989-9811. We know a lot of you listen like after the fact or you're at work. You don't have time to chime in right away. We love that you write in and join the show. It's a sports show hosted by two people that have actual real jobs, and then we spend an hour having fun with each other, hanging out and just talking sports, which brings me to my co-host Steve Mickelson from Las Vegas, Nevada, and MixPicks.com. 2Ks in Mix, 2Ks in Picks, MixPicks.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. It's a beautiful day outside.
Is it really there? Is it here? I haven't been outside. I don't know. Is it a nice day here? The reason I bring up our real jobs is I do a morning radio talk show I think most of our listeners are aware of. But as the show word of the show spreads, we get new people that are just sports talk listeners and such. And you're a regular on that show, especially during football season. And you and I have been working together for 20 plus years. But on the regular show yesterday, I made a comment, which is what Marcus is writing in about. And I don't know if you're going to be able to read between the lines of what my answer was. So I'm going to let you go first. Marcus wrote in and said, "Hey, Rob, you posed the question Monday morning on the Rad Radio show. So let's get Steve's answer. Now that the regular season is over, who was the most disappointing team this year in the NBA? And same for positivity, the most surprisingly good one." So if you look at the season, because we do this every year with all the leagues, NFL in particular, if you look at the NBA, what's the most disappointing team this year based on where the regular season ended?
I don't really – well, I would have to go to the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns going into the season, the offseason when they acquired Bradley Beal, the thought was is this team's going to be one of the top contending teams for the NBA playoffs. They finished sixth, 49-33. Wasn't a horrible season. It's just for me, I felt – that they were one of the top three or four teams in the NBA going into the season, and they never at any time threatened at all.
So this came up, and I didn't say the most. I did say that if you were going to have a roundtable discussion about the most disappointing NBA teams this regular season, that one of the teams that I would have to put in the conversation would be the Sacramento Kings. Because after they were the three seed last year, the way they've played, especially in the last 2 months of this season, and they've got the play-in game tonight, which we'll get to later, I felt that they had to be in the conversation. So that's where Marcus's question came from. Now, if you had to go the other direction, which I hadn't given this one a lot of thought until I saw Marcus's email, what's the most surprising team? What team in the NBA made you go, whoa, I didn't see this coming this season?
OKC. For me, they just had a fantastic season. The fact that they're the number one seed in the West, as loaded as the West is going into the season, the Nuggets, the Suns, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Mavericks, I mean, just all of that talent, and OKC came out as the number one seed to me. That is hands down the biggest surprise to me.
So I will not argue with that at all, but would you be upset if I threw in the New York Knicks? They were my biggest surprise on the positive side.
No, I had high expectations for the Knicks. I thought they'd finish third or fourth. They finished second. The bigger surprise for me was the finish with when you tell me that Randle is going to be gone for pretty much the entire second half of the season, and they still end up where they did. That, to me, was a big surprise that I was not expecting.
Obviously, the breaking news, the thing most people are talking about are the playoffs, both NBA and NHL, and we're going to circle back to them. I want to throw in a couple of quick hit stories that are breaking or being talked about before we dive into those two things. I'm going to jump to the NFL real quick because you can talk about the NFL anytime and ask the question everybody's been asking, which is, have the Dallas Cowboys done anything right this offseason? The answer seems to be no. We're a week away from the draft. By the way, speaking of the draft, next week, obviously, we'll keep covering the playoffs that are going on, but we're going to be working our way towards the NFL draft, which day one is Thursday. Yes, we will give you our outlook, our board picks, whatever, but the big thing is on Friday of next week, next week, Friday the 26th, we're going to do a special three-hour mixed pick show from noon to three, where we're going to evaluate day one, talk about the surprises, the moves, the trades, and then what happens as we move into day two that night. So we're really excited to actually have 3 hours to talk about it. It won't just be the draft. We'll still cover any breaking news or whatever, but that's a week from Friday where we'll be doing that. But with that, just what, 10 days away or so from now, neither Dak Prescott nor CeeDee Lamb have signed contract extensions, and the Cowboys have made it clear that Lamb's deal has taken precedent over Dak Prescott's, which that's its own story we talked about last week. And Lamb has made it clear he ain't practicing. He ain't training camp until he gets signed. And sure enough, he wasn't at the facility yesterday for the morning, for the team's morning meeting at voluntary workouts. And more worrisome is the fact that Lamb is not expected to show face at all as he awaits his new deal. And this update is made worse by the Eagles and wideout Devontae Smith agreeing to terms on a lucrative extension where he got, Devontae did, $51 million guaranteed, a $75 million extension, which means Lamb's price tag has gone up. And so many people of prominence are writing how embarrassing it is that the Eagles signed Smith before the Cowboys signed Lamb. It's a big yap-yap story that, to me, Steve, just reinforces what we've been talking about. What the hell is going on in Dallas? And the answer is, I don't think anybody knows, including Jerry Jones.
Yeah, the Cowboys situation is not pretty at this point. I don't blame CG Lamb. Let's get the contract done. I don't want to go to, you know, these voluntary workouts, run the risk of getting injured. He holds all the cards. Jerry Jones has essentially came out and said, you know, he's going to make him one of the top paid wide receivers in the NFL. And by that comment, you know he's going to get his money. It's just a case of working out the fine details. As you mentioned, they've put Dak Prescott on the back burner. The thing that I'm taking out of the whole thing is Brandon Ayuk and what's going to happen with the 49ers. I think we now have a clear indication with Smith's contract with the Eagles. I believe the Niners should be in that same ballpark, knowing, okay, hey, look, let's go to Ayuk. Let's go a 3-year, 75, 78, maybe $80 million. We'll throw you 51, the $55 million guaranteed. So for me, I think it becomes, in my eyes, a lot more clarity on where the 49ers should be with Ayuk. And if that's not good enough, if I'm the 49ers, then I'm looking at it saying, okay, you know, it's time for us to look elsewhere. And maybe we need to make a trade come, you know, the draft.
Yeah. And the yap yap is from two sides in the regional Northern California area. On one side is what you just alluded to, is that the Niners are going to make a deal sometime between now and Thursday or on Thursday, where Ayuk gets dealt and the Niners get back a whole bunch of draft picks that they gave up for Trey Lance or some form of that kind of thing. The other version is, no, Ayuk wants to stay in San Francisco. He just wants to be paid. There's a story about Brock Purdy very publicly yesterday kind of wooing Brandon Ayuk, and that the plan really is, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, figure out Ayuk, and Debo is going to be let go after the next season. Who knows? This is one of the many things we're going to be watching over the next week. The other breaking quote story that I'm just going to showbiz myself, as we say, I'm going to give you the ending before the beginning rather than my usual setup, is I don't believe the story for a minute. I believe the agent. But the story broke late last night, our time, into the early morning, that Rory McIlroy of the PGA, one of the most prominent critics of the Saudi-backed breakaway league, LIV Golf, was leaving the PGA in what would be the most hypocritical move in modern history almost, and going to live for $850 million and a 2% equity in the LIV Golf League. His agent dismissed rumors this morning, called it fake news and there's zero truth. I'm not a big fan of agents. I believe his agent. I think this is all made up.
Would you go for $800 million? And the big question would be is how much is guaranteed if the league goes away? You know, am I getting $50 million and I'm banned for life from the PGA? Those are the fine-tuning things. I have a hard time believing if it's $850 million pretty much guaranteed that I'd be staying with the PGA. I would be walking. I'd be taking the money. I mean, this is my life set. My kids' lives are set. My grandchildren are set. I mean, this is generational wealth going to last a long time.
The only – I don't disagree with that except on a couple levels. First of all, of all people in the PGA, Rory McIlroy already has generational wealth. Not now, this would be multi-generational wealth guaranteed. I get it. It's that thing of, my God, do you really just sell your soul because he has been so prominently anti-Liv? What you asked me, I mean, yeah, I'd go. Of course I would. But I don't know that I would have, if I would, had I been so outspoken about something. I just don't. Okay, maybe it's just I don't want it to happen. Maybe that's
But how betrayed does he feel? Because he was the PGA's biggest supporter there. And then the PGA, what, 5-6 months ago, did a total about face and basically said, no, we can merge with them. They're going to throw us all this. Which means the PGA did the sellout, not him. And now you're looking at it going, well, okay, we already know the PGA is willing to sell out for all the money. So why should he hold firm to the PGA if they've already admitted they would sell out for the money?
So that would be the biggest middle finger to the PGA. And if that was his reasoning, like if that was his public statement, that would sell a lot of people, probably including me, going, hey, you know what? All right, not bad. I still, my prediction is that ain't going to happen. But again, it's out there. It's breaking news. For the NBA playoffs, we're going to focus almost exclusively today on the West because they play. But there's news from the East. And you alluded to this yesterday, Steve. Broke about an hour ago that the Milwaukee Bucks are preparing to be without Giannis, two-time MVP, for the start of their Eastern Conference first-round series against the Pacers. The third-seeded Bucks open the series against the sixth-seeded Pacers on Sunday. It's Tuesday, and they're already saying they don't expect to have Giannis for the start of the series. They're hopeful that treatment on his left calf strain will allow him to return later in the series. That, to me, in my experience in the sports world, is all very ominous. And can the Bucks go down? I think yesterday you already had the Bucks going down to the Pacers. I don't remember if you actually said that or you said that you saw it could happen. But, I mean, can the Bucks even go down 0-2 and have Giannis come back and have a chance? I mean, this to me is the Bucks are done.
I've viewed this from the get-go that Giannis, I believe, is not going to play in the first round. I don't think he will be back for the Pacers series at all. I think they're trying to keep it hopeful, keep fans interested so they don't just throw in the towels. I think they can beat the Pacers without Giannis. I don't think they can go any farther than that. But I think it's going to be a tough-fought series if Giannis doesn't play. I just don't think the Bucks are showing their cards yet, but I would be surprised if he plays in the series at all.
With Giannis, even for a few games, you still give the nod to the Pacers, don't you?
No, I actually give the nod to the Bucks.
Okay.
In a really close series, I think the Bucks have enough talent to win it. Pacers are fun to watch, can score, but they have no defense. And at this point, if Doc Rivers can put any defense on the court at all for the Bucks, I think they have enough talent to win it. But it's going to be a tough series. I think it's going to go to the end.
All right, again, to be clear, because it gets confusing, and we try not to do that with people, the NBA is divided into two conferences, East and West. The playoffs feature 8 teams in each conference competing for a spot in the NBA Finals. And each conference has what begins tonight, their own play-in tournament. The top 6 teams in each of the conferences, they are in the playoffs. The playoffs do not start tonight. This is the play-in tournament of the 4 bottom teams, seeds 7 through 10. 2 teams will advance out of the tournament and secure a spot into whatever the actual NBA playoffs. For example, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Los Angeles Lakers, who are ranked 7th and 8th, play tonight. And we'll talk about, and the winner of that game automatically is the number 7 seed. They're in the playoffs. The loser is still alive but has to play the winner of the bottom half of the tournament bracket. We're going to preview that game officially along with the Kings game, which is the later game. But the story yesterday was this. Kobe Bryant, a Laker, famously said after a terrible last season, after the Lakers' 62nd loss of the 2015-2016 campaign. That was their third year in a row, setting a franchise record for defeats in a season. And his last campaign in the NBA, he famously said, "You either win a championship or you're crap." He didn't use the word crap. "It's very black and white to me," end quote. And so a lot of people are writing and agreeing with the idea that if a championship is the only thing that matters, the Lakers should enter tonight's NBA play-in matchup game against the New Orleans Pelicans with a simple plan. Lose. Rest their stars. Make up or rest some real injuries. We already know about AD. He's hurting. Play a tanking lineup. However they do it to avoid the Denver Nuggets. The Lakers, yes, would forfeit a chance at the playoffs in a one, because if they win, they're in. They're in. But they would put everything on the winner-take-all scenario against either the Warriors or the Kings. But the idea is that no one believes this Lakers team can take the Nuggets more than five games, let alone what it's going to take to win, like take the series more than five games. But give the Lakers a few extra days of rest for Davis and LeBron before the matchup with the remains of the Kings and the Warriors, so they play OKC. The Thunder are young. The Lakers have been dominant. Three wins in a row this season against OKC. Better matchup. Then they go on to either face the Mavericks or even eventually the Clippers. You're never going to say it out loud, Steve. Do you believe anyone inside the Laker locker room is talking like this? LeBron will never do this. But is management, is coaching, are they even thinking like this, or is this all media manufactured?
This is one of the craziest things I've ever heard said. This is all media manufacturing. I don't think any athlete in their right mind would look at this and say, hey, here's a good idea. And to back that up, championships are all that matters. Okay, you can't win the NBA championship without going through the Nuggets. Oh, you beat OKC in the first round. Let's say you beat the Clippers or the Mavs in the second round. If the Nuggets keep winning, you have to play the Nuggets anyway. So why not face Goliath right out of the gate, show you can win, knock them down, and then somebody will take you seriously. To sit and try to run and hide and hope the Nuggets fall, and we're going to intentionally lose a game that if we win, we're in because we're afraid of this team, is crazy to me.
And you mentioned that's the thing that's left out of the theory. This whole thing went viral. It was all over ESPN yesterday. Everybody's talking about it. You left out that the other part of this plan, this brilliant plan of intentionally losing tonight to avoid the Nuggets, is that it also relies on someone else knocking the Nuggets out, which is, of course, possible, but hard to imagine, and it's out of your control entirely, whereas winning tonight and getting into the playoffs is in control.
Yes. I had not heard that theory, so the first time I heard it was you talking, and I'm like, this is crazy. No one in their right mind would be thinking like this. The Nuggets still are going to have home field. If the Lakers lose tonight, they play the Pelicans. Do I think the Pelicans are going to beat the Nuggets? No. So I'm already the Nuggets into the second round. No one's beaten the Nuggets.
Let me give you another quick news note out of the NBA. We will, right after a quick break, preview tonight's games. Jordy Fernandez has emerged as the Brooklyn Nets' choice to become the franchise's next coach. He will take over the Nets after they went 32-50 under interim coach Kevin Ollie. That's their fifth coach since 2020. Now, the reason this is a story regionally is that Jordy Fernandez is the Sacramento Kings' top assistant coach. He has been a fast-rising coaching candidate in the past 2 years. This is what happens when you're successful. Those of us that are 49er fans have seen all of our great coordinators leave after a year or two and become some of the best head coaches in the NFL. Of course, Fernandez was part of the 2023 NBA Coach of the Year Mike Brown's revival with the Kings. He began building his head coaching candidacy and stops with Denver for six seasons under Michael Malone and then with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The thing people care about here, Steve, is does losing Jordy Fernandez, what kind of effect does that actually have on the Kings? Because and I don't know how much you need to know of the inner workings of how much Fernandez does. I love Mike Brown. I think he's a hell of a head coach. It's never great to lose somebody, but is this something that should further drag down the Kings fans' already low momentum and enthusiasm, or just get over it?
I look at it, as you said, I love Mike Brown. I think he's a great coach. To me, that's the important part here. You're not losing your head coach. You're keeping Mike Brown. If you really believe he's a great coach, and I fall into that category, I think he is a great coach. I'm not that worried about his top assistant leaving. Yes, there's going to be a setback. Yes, there's going to have to be a readjusting period. But if Mike Brown's the coach we all think he is, the Kings will be just fine.
All right, so we got two games tonight. As we said, we've got the Lakers at New Orleans. We've got Golden State at Sacramento. We'll go over those games and then jump immediately to the NHL as well after this.
Knicks Picks, the Knicks Picks Sports Show.
Phone number is 888-989-9811. As mentioned, we got the two play-in games in the West tonight for the NBA. The number 7 team and the number 8 team play each other first. The winner of that game is automatically the 7th seed. Win and you're in to the NBA playoffs for your respective conference. So either the Lakers or the Pelicans win tonight in the early game on TNT, 4:30 Pacific time. They're in. They will be part of the actual playoffs. This is not the playoffs. This is the play-in to get to the playoffs. We talked about the idea of the Lakers tanking and dismissed that entirely. So tell me what you got, Steve. What do you see tonight? And I don't know if you have any update on AD's condition, but we got the Lakers at the Pelicans.
Right now, the Pelicans are 1.5 most every place. There are a couple ones, a couple of twos on the Pelicans out there. Anthony Davis is listed as questionable. I find it hard to believe he's not going to play, you know, but who knows with the media story, maybe the Lakers are looking to tank it and take tonight off and take their chances in the next one. Lakers are going to play everyone. Pelicans seem to have been falling there at the end of the season. The one thing on the Pelicans side for me is they play back-to-back games against the Lakers, both in New Orleans. They got blown out in the first game. It's really tough for a team to go two games in a row and beat a team at home in these back-to-backs, especially when it is a playoff atmosphere like we're going to see here tonight. Because when you're in, lose, you still got to play one more and hope you get in. So the energy in New Orleans tonight's going to be great, but I just have faith in LeBron. I think he's going to make it happen. Brandon Ingram did come back in the last game. I think he had 12 points in 22 to 25 minutes. So you got to believe they're going to ramp up his minutes as well. Zion Williams, who was shut down by LeBron in the last game, is going to have a big game and carry the Pelicans like he can. And he has shown in the past, but I still lean to the Lakers in this game.
We will also someday, when we have more time on this show, things are slower, have you retell your story of your bias against the city of New Orleans based on your visit there. I don't know if that plays into your prediction or your pick, but you did mention that with this game, the loser is not done. The loser of this game is still alive. They have to play the winner of the other game tonight. This is where it gets confusing for some people. There is an elimination game tonight. The second game is at 7 o'clock. Also on TNT. And whoever loses this game is done. They're out. That's it. Go home. No more NBA for you this season. As of yesterday, you had the home. You had one of them. I've Freudian slip already said it. One of them are one and done. The game tonight is the Golden State Warriors at the Sacramento Kings.
And right now, the Warriors are a 2.5-point favorite. Oof. At Sacramento. The two teams split. They both went 1-1 at home, so they were 2-2 overall against each other. I just think the Warriors are playing a lot better basketball right now. They're winning on the road. They're 10-2, I believe, in their last 12. The Kings limping into this spot. There was a lot of high hopes week and a half ago that the Kings could possibly fight their way up to a number 6 seed. Now they're sitting in a number 9 seed. The injuries, the depth on the team has been really disappointing. And the winner of this game just earns the right to stay alive. But then the loser of the Lakers-Pelicans will host the winner of this game in that do-or-die game that's to follow. I think Steph Curry gets it done. The Warriors get it done. I'm hoping the Kings can keep it close, but I'm not even convinced the Kings are going to keep this game close.
Yeah, I'm ready for the Kings to be done and start working on recovering and having a better offseason. So the way you see it happening is the Lakers win, they're in the playoffs, they're done until the playoffs actually start, and then the Warriors have to go to New Orleans and play the Pelicans. And yet of those, and again, just to confirm, you of those four teams, you don't see any of them being long-term threats in the playoffs, do you?
I would give the nod to the Warriors in that situation. I think, but I really don't see the Warriors getting by OKC. I think that's where I stumble with. If they can, you know, win both games, beat OKC, maybe they can go a little bit farther. I don't see them getting to the Western Conference Finals or into the NBA Finals.
One other quick NBA note. The Phoenix Suns signed a deal with Grayson Allen, their guard, 4-year, $70 million extension. That keeps him out of unrestricted free agency this summer, rewards him for his career-best season with the Suns. He actually made 8 three-pointers in 7 games this season. That's the most in such games in Suns history, and it was second in the entire league behind a guy named Steph Curry. Big deal for the Suns to have wrapped up Grayson Allen?
I think it was a good spot. My complaint with Grayson Allen has always been, you know, going back to his days in college, that he tends to get in a little trouble here because he's on that dirtier side for players, so I'm not a big fan of his. The Suns, no depth, just another shooter on the team. I wish they would look more at big guys and other things that can contribute versus, you know, in my opinion, they have 4 guys who want the ball and want to shoot, and that's just not great NBA basketball to me.
As promised, we jump to hockey, but before we get to what you're expecting, the playoff situation, this is something we've been watching since somebody wrote in a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and was asking on the over-under of the San Jose Sharks' chance to get to 20 wins. They were at 18 at the time, and I believe Steve said at the time, they're not going to get past 18. Update from Alec, who wrote in rad@radradio.com. He said, ladies and gentlemen, there's only one game left in the Sharks' 23-24 season. They sit at 19 wins, 53 losses, 19-53-9. Can they beat the Flames and make it to 20? We'll find out Thursday. They do play Calgary. Do you have the Sharks, Steve, getting to their 20th win against Calgary?
It would be great if it happened because it's showing the Sharks are playing all the way through the end of the season. Early on in the season, I didn't even think they were playing at the start of the season. They're just a bad team. I they go on the road to Calgary. I got to believe every Sharks players got their bags packed and already has, okay, I'm flying home. What time's my flight? Let's get out of that game. They did get to 19. I was corrected because I didn't think they'd get to 19. I still don't think they get to 20, but if they did, it'd be great because they played all the way through the last game of the season.
To what matters, 16 teams in the NHL as well qualify for the actual playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's the top 3 teams in each division that make up the first 12, and then the remaining 4 spots are filled by the next 2 highest-placed finishers based on regular season record. We know the West. In the East, we're literally down to 4 teams that have a shot at 1 spot. First, though, the New York Rangers clinched what we call the President's Trophy. Basically, it means you've got the best regular season record. They beat Ottawa 4-0 last night, and they have home ice advantage throughout the playoffs. I ask you this continuously. We have different listeners all the time. Home field in the NFL is not what it once was. You say home court in the NBA still matters, especially when you look at places like, for example, Golden 1 and the energy that comes out of the Sacramento Kings fans. How important is it that the New York Rangers have home ice through the Stanley Cup playoffs?
For the Rangers, it is big. I'm not sure it's going to get them into the Stanley Cup and the Stanley Cup champions, but it gives them a good head start. There are still quality teams in the East. I mean, the Bruins, the Panthers, and the Hurricanes are all really good teams. And I actually like all 3 of them over the Rangers. So I'm not that high on the Rangers, even though they have the best record there. But I'm going to jump into the East and the wild card matchup because 4 teams are still alive here.
Yep.
Just to break down the scenario. So tonight we have the Capitals are playing the Flyers. Right now, the Flyers are at home. They're a $1.40 favorite. If the Capitals win, they lock up the last seed. It's over.
That's it.
That's it. If they lose, the Red Wings play at Montreal Canadiens. They came back from being down late in that game, ended up winning it in overtime. If the Capitals lose and the Red Wings win, the Red Wings are in. So if the Capitals lose, the Red Wings lose, the Penguins then play at the Islanders, who have locked up their seed. So you got to think they might take the day off. If the Penguins win on Wednesday, then they would be in. And for the Flyers to get in, they have to beat the Capitals and then have the Red Wings and Penguins both lose for them to make that final slot.
So it could all be over tonight, depending on a variety of scenarios, but this could leak in to Wednesday. By the way, the Detroit at Montreal game and the Washington at Philadelphia game are the exact same time. They'll be going on simultaneously, 4 p.m. Pacific time. You got to watch them through the NHL Network, the paper, or ESPN Plus if you have that. We'll be showing both of those games. And as Steve said, Pittsburgh is the other team in the mix. The four teams, Washington, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia, only one of them can get in from the East. And Pittsburgh plays tomorrow, Wednesday, in terms of getting in. So, Steve, what do you see it ending tonight? And what do you and which way does it go?
I think it ends tonight if the Capitals beat the Flyers. And I could see the Capitals beating the Flyers in this game. I just... pessimistic side of me, Red Wings, I thought would win that game last night. They were at home and should easily have won it. They were down. They ended up having to win in overtime. I'm just not sure they can win in Montreal. So then that's where I give the Penguins that little bit of outside shot, because if the Capitals can't get it done, I think the Penguins get it done on Wednesday.
You are a Detroit guy and a Red Wings fan, a long-suffering Lions fan. By the way, I wanted to mention that, you know, the President's Trophy, best record of the regular season, which we talked about the Rangers getting, only your Detroit Red Wings. They're the only team to win the trophy more than four times. They've won it six times. So you've got that for now, Steve. You got that culture.
Yes. I cannot bash the Red Wings organization in any way. They've turned it back around. I think this will be the eighth straight season they haven't made the playoffs, but I can't complain. I think they made it 25 straight years prior to that, so they were always there. It's good to see them rebuilding. I was hoping they had enough to get into the playoffs this year, but the future does look bright on that. And I want to hit on one more quick thing on the playoffs. I know we haven't hit the West, but the Golden Knights have two games left. They're against the Blackhawks, and I still think the Golden Knights are going to find a way to slide into that sixth seed ahead of the Kings, knocking the Kings down to the seventh spot, which will set the Golden Knights up much better to advance deep in the playoffs from the sixth slot as opposed to the eighth slot.
Why?
Because they have two easy games left. The Kings only have one game left, so they have the opportunity to win 4 points. They're only 1 point behind the Kings. The Kings can only win two. So as long as they win tonight against the Blackhawks, and they are a $4 favorite, they will pass the Kings, jump into the sixth seed. And then their last game, I believe, is against the Anaheim Ducks, who are a bad team. And I see them beating the Ducks as well, the last game of the season. Keep that sixth seed.
Does the sixth seed give the Knights a shot at playing at home, having home court, having home ice advantage? Because that is one of those arenas where home ice really matters.
It is a big part of that, but I think as bad as they've played on the road this year, I still believe the Kings are a good enough team because they will play the third place team, which you're looking at. Two, three, you're looking at the Winnipeg Jets most likely as that three seed, and I can easily see them beating the Jets and advancing.
All right, we got a quick break. We got one more hockey story, and believe it or not, a little bit of baseball as well after this.
Mix Picks, the Mix Picks Sports Show.
Let's go!
Back to San Jose Sharks. Randall wrote in. He is a Sharks fan. And we're talking about whether or not the only reason probably on Thursday to watch the NHL would be Q can the Sharks get to their 20th win of the season when they play Calgary? Randall says, I'm a Sharks fan. The Sharks gave up 9 goals, and McDavid got his 100th assist of the season, joining a very short list ever to do show. I'm with Steve. The Sharks have both feet on that flight home, and I'm a Sharks fan. They're not going to beat Calgary. The other story from the NHL, we talked about it last week, and then like that night it became official. There was a word, there was a chance that the Arizona Coyotes were going to relocate to Salt Lake City. It's all but done now. In fact, the players have been told next season you're playing in Salt Lake. The NHL Board of Governors has to approve the transaction. All signs point to it happening. It transfers the team to the Utah Jazz owner. We don't need to get into all the hows and the whys and all of this. The NHL is thrilled behind the scenes, we're told, because they view Salt Lake as a great landing spot for hockey. It's a winter sports town. They're also expected to host the 2034 Winter Olympics. They will just play in the same arena as the Utah Jazz already do, with some modifications to make it even more hockey-friendly. It's already hosted some exhibition games, etc. And the Coyotes have had it's just been a mess in Arizona. They've been trying to find a home really since 2021-22, when Glendale terminated its lease. They lost an election that would have gotten them a spot in a different part of Arizona. And then when we talked about it, we heard they were going to try to participate in this auction at the end of June to get some land, and that everything was on hold until that auction. And then, nope, now the Coyotes are gone. They're playing, and they're not going to be called the Coyotes anymore. So first of all, Steve, just the idea of hockey going to Salt Lake and not being in Arizona, now that it's official, I mean, any reaction just to that reality?
Well, Arizona hockey isn't totally gone. Part of the agreement of allowing this to happen right now is the Coyotes go to Salt Lake City. They will be a new name, but everyone in that organization goes as well. Murillo has 5 years to build an arena, and if they do, the NHL is giving him an NHL expansion team. They've already said that. They've reached this agreement as part of the sale, so that's why they're keeping the team name. It's not going with, and Murillo was willing to make the move right now because if he is able to win that bid, and I think the bid on the land auction is in June, if he's able to do it, he has 5 years to build the arena, and then he continues moving forward with hockey in Arizona.
So Murillo's the current owner of the Coyotes, and what would happen is, or what will happen is that they're going to transfer ownership of the existing version of the Coyotes to the owner of the Utah Jazz, the NBA team. But there is this thing that Steve's talking about, that if Murillo can build this facility within 5 years, basically Arizona goes without an NHL team for about 5 years, but then they get one because the NHL moves an expansion team or some other team in there. And Salt Lake City, is that a good spot for the NHL? Do you agree with their thinking?
I think it is. The part that jumped to me out of this story as well, and sorry to go, I know we're running short on time.
We're good.
But it just kind of shows to me that all of these owners own teams, but do they really own the teams like you own your house? And I know there's eminent domain that they can come and take your house away because we're going to put a freeway through it. But that's where this is at. Because when you read the story, the NHL is buying the Coyotes for $1 billion. They are going to take over ownership of the team to then transfer that team to the new owner in Salt Lake City for $1.2 billion. So there's a 200, you know, there's that $200 million, whatever it is, transaction fee that the NHL is pocketing to move this team to Salt Lake City. It's not an owner to owner. It's an owner to NHL at the NHL's asking price. And then the NHL to the new owner at the NHL's asking price. So again, it brings to that part, you can own a team, but do you ever really own it? Because the league ultimately owns that team.
As you mentioned, the team will not be called the Coyotes. Not only because that's not necessarily what Utah's known for, but more importantly, because it's already written in that there could be an Arizona or Phoenix Coyotes, whatever they want to call themselves, if and when this whole thing works out for them in a few years. So there are people there. We don't know yet, But here's what's floating around. Some people say that they should be called the Salt Lake Golden Eagles as an homage to the professional team that was there from 69 to 94 before they left town and became the Detroit Vipers. Others have suggested winter-themed names like the Utah Blizzard. A lot of people are focusing on Utah's nickname as the Beehive State and have chimed in with such ideas as the Utah Buzz, the Utah Hive, the Utah Stingers, the Utah Swarm, Salt Lake City Swarm. I don't know how much you care about these things, Steve. Any of those grab you? Or do you even care enough to comment?
No, the only one that hit me was the winter themed being the Blizzard. I don't know if the Avalanche would have any claim being they Avalanche, and now you're going to Blizzard, kind of taking into and trying, because they're close enough that there is that TV rights deal, I would like to believe. Look, this is our viewing thing. One of the things we saw with the Giants and the A's for many years is the Giants had those rights and the A's couldn't move anywhere because the Giants own that. So I'm not seeing the Blizzards come out of this, but the rest, you know, doesn't matter to me as long as they have good colors.
Which, by the way, I mean this obviously mostly jokingly, but do both of the Colorado teams, I mean, we've got the Rockies. That was an obvious one. Do we need the Blizzard and the Avalanche? Do they have to name all their teams after natural disasters that are quite dangerous and deadly to people? I mean, come on. Let's jump to baseball real quick. Same question, different week. Steve, the San Francisco Giants paid $62 million to add a two-time Cy Young winner to their rotation. They're 2.5 weeks into the season, and they're still waiting for him to show up. Blake Snell on Sunday had his second start for the Giants against one of his former teams, the Tampa Bay Rays, who chased him out after 4 innings, 78 pitches, and 7 runs, and sent the Giants to their second loss, 9-4 in 2 Blake Snell starts. I am one of those guys that will tell you I don't care about much that happens in baseball in April or even May. It's too early. But sometimes there are reasons to step back and go, uh-oh. Is this an uh-oh thing with Blake Snell, or is this a, look, they signed him late. He wasn't in spring training. Whatever he did to stay in shape is not the same thing. Give it time, Giants fans. Settle down.
Two ways to go on this. The realistic part is give him time. We talked about him after his first start. It's going to take him 3 to 4 starts to get back into that playing shape. It's early in the season. He missed training camp. This is the thing that's going to happen. Now, going to the other side, if you recall during our conversations for free agent players that were still out there, Blake Snell's out there. He was looking for Gerrit Cole type of money. Mm-hmm. And I really hope the Red Sox don't sign him. Whoever's going to sign him, I'm not a big fan of, because I'm not sold that Blake Snell is really all that good. So this is more the Blake Snell that I was expecting to come out, which is why I wanted the Yankees to sign him for $300 million, and then he could be this kind of pitcher, and the media would go crazy at the amount of money they gave him for being so ineffective. But for the Giants, you got to believe the pitcher you sign is the one that you thought you were getting, not the pitcher I believe he is. And after 3 or 4 starts, he'll be back in game shape. He'll be back, you know, getting the ball and throwing good, and the Giants will be okay.
All right, congratulations to the Chicago White Sox. They got shut out by the Kansas City Royals last night and officially have assumed the mantle of worst team currently in the NFL, in Major League Baseball. They have 2 wins and 14 losses. The Miami Marlins have 3 wins and 14 losses. On the other side of the pendulum, Steve, are 16-ish games into the season. We've got, what was the number? We got 10-ish teams in double-digit wins. You got the Yankees, the Orioles, the Guardians from Cleveland, the Royals. You've got Atlanta's got 10 wins. Milwaukee's got 10. Pittsburgh's got 11. Chicago's got 10. And, of course, we've got the Dodgers and the Padres at 11 and 10 wins each. Of all those teams, first of all, Pittsburgh still jumps out at me. Which ones are for real?
Well, I think the easier question is which ones are not for real. Okay. I don't think the Guardians and the Royals are 90-plus win teams, and I don't put the Pirates there. They're all great stories at this point right now. I just don't see them maintaining it. The Royals, to me, is the biggest surprise, sitting at 11-6. The run differential is plus 39. This team's scoring runs, are getting good pitching. Singer has been outstanding. Lugo had a good outing, I think it was last night. So they're getting good pitching, which I didn't think their staff was very good going into the season at all, but I don't think they can maintain it. They're just, these guys have been around for a while. It's not like they're young rookies like the Orioles coming up with Gunnar Henderson and now Jackson Holliday. We've seen them. They've been in the league. I don't think they can maintain.
By the way, that run differential of plus 39 is the highest in the league, four ahead of the Cleveland Guardians. And but no surprise, the worst run differential belongs to the worst team, the Chicago White Sox, who are at negative 53. So back to the don't panic or do panic button, the Houston Astros overall, they're in last place in the American League West. They are 6-12, and they play what should have been on paper and early in the season marquee matchup. The Atlanta Braves are at Houston tonight. But what do you think of where the Astros are? Should the fans be panicking, and how they're going to fare against one of the clear best teams in the Major League Baseball?
Hunter Brown in his last outing was awful. I don't think he got out of the first inning. I think the opponent scored 9 runs on the Astros in the first inning. Lopez has been surprising for the Braves. Here's a guy they needed to step up. They got Spencer Strider now out for the season. He's thrown the ball well. This Astros team just got to be saying, you know, like the Sixers, just hang on until we can get Verlander back at the end of this month. I mean, a couple other their pitchers were throwing the ball yesterday, so there's hopes that maybe they can be back sometime in May. They're just trying to survive at this point, but their bullpen is awful. Their starting pitching has been terrible, which has led to, I believe, a lot of the bullpen woes. I mean, Hader gave it up again, and he's one of the top relievers in all of baseball in a non-save situation. He got lit up as well. Astros, to me, can be in serious trouble.
One other quick note, because we are over time, but just because we have to mention it, Major League Baseball is literally publicly saying that they, quote, expect to quickly interview and clear Shohei Ohtani of any wrongdoing now that his former interpreter, Ippei Mizuhura, is facing federal criminal charges. There's no point to the interview if they already expect to clear him. This whole thing still stinks. We'll dive into it more when we have more time. I'll see you in 23 hours, Steve.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Mix.
Sports Show.